Hey, you can't go in there.
Lady, if I had a credit for every time someone said that to me, I'd be as rich as your slime-sucking boss.
My foot hit the center of Rupert Roundtree's door like a sledgehammer on a melon. Roundtree was at his giant desk, more real wood, scanning some data on his floating computer screen. He turned to me as I broke open his door.
Zaka Kappa Johnson Chino! I was just thinking of you!
I hope it didn't tax your brain too much.
The assistant scampered into the office behind me.
I tried to stop him, Mr. Roundtree. Should I call security?
That's all right, Jesse. Oh, the Zakathalon here is going to be the network's biggest reality superstar before long. He's allowed a little idiosyncratic behavior. You can go now. We'll be fantacuous. Honest to ingenuity, Zaktastrophe. I was just looking over the Let's Kill Zak results from the test screenings. You are going to be so hot when this show drops. You're going to have to start wiping yourself with flame-retardant toilet paper.
I survived your gray goo, Roundtree.
Like I knew you would. And I'm sure it was triumphastical.
Sexy wasn't with me, by the way. Unlike all the other times you tried to kill me, she was safely at the hotel when this one hit.
She was? Oh, well, she can't be in every episode, right? We don't want her stealing your spotlight.
I popped my gun into my hand and brought it down hard on his desk.
Okay, here's how we're gonna play this. You're gonna tell me the truth, because every time you lie to me, every time I even suspect that you're lying to me, I'm gonna break something very expensive in this office. Lie enough times, and it'll be your kneecaps. Got it?
Gotta hand it to you, Zaktanium. You have the star tantrum down pat.
You expected Sexy to be at my house today based on the morning's news reports. That's why the goo is programmed to attack everyone in the building rather than just me.
I've told you before, the drama quotient heightens with the addition of potentially collateralized victimization. It's all good for the show.
I lifted my gun, aiming it at his computer screen.
The show is a front, and you know it. You're not trying to kill me. You're after Sexy.
Zakquiescence! That's utterly preposteronious.
This time I took out the computer screen that covered the northern wall of the office.
It wasn't a coincidence that Sexy was at the Kabuki Palace the night your droids attacked me. You lured us both there, but she was the one you wanted killed in the chaos. That way it'll be written off as a tragic accident during a crazy Zak Johnson adventure. When I saved her and became her bodyguard, you just kept trying to get her under the guise of the Let's Kill Zak show. That's why all the attacks came when she was nearby, at the hotel, in the limo, and at the HV studio.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I turned to another one of his computer wall screens.
I know about the memo from the governor's aide, Roundtree. I know that one of Spearhoof's main contributors put out a hit on Sexy because they feared that she was a threat to the governor's re-election plans. And I checked the records. Your corporation contributed over 5 million credits to the governor's last election campaign. You've gotten some sweet corporate tax breaks out of it so far, and there's huge media deregulation legislation in the works now that'll make you a ton of credits if it passes. You couldn't risk losing that, so you put the hit out on Sexy.
Roundtree moved to speak, but stopped when I aimed my gun at his third and last wall monitor.
You hired a hitman. That's who's been sending the patter threats. And that's who put the bomb in the flowers and gave them to that kid during the concert. But you don't trust the hitman to get the job done. So you've been using the Let's Kill Zak idea as insurance and to do the job yourself.
Are you finished?
Yeah.
I took a seat in one of his guest chairs.
And so are you.
I don't think so, Zachariases.
He leaned back in his chair, put his arms casually behind his head, and his feet up on his huge desk.
First of all, the whole scenario is preposterous. True or not, it's just too crazy to be believed.
Which is exactly how you planned it.
Second of all, you have no proof. It's all wild supposition based on the idle speculation of an unreliable reality HV actor who is currently in bitter contract negotiations with me over his show.
We're not negotiating anything.
Give me a nano to call the press, and the story will be running in the evening cycle. Zak Johnson, seeking a pay raise for his upcoming reality series on the Faux Network, shoots up the office of the network's president while spouting conspiratorial gibberish. You know, it's actually a great publicity piece for the show. I'm surprised I didn't think of it myself.
You're not going to win this one, Roundtree.
I'm sorry, Zak. Can I call you Zak? Oh, but I already have. I'm squashing you like the insignificant little bug that you are, because that's what happens when you come at Rupert Roundtree alone.
He's not alone, Rupert.
He's with me.
Hans, what are you doing here?
I'm here to set things right, Rupert. I don't condone murder for hire in my administration.
Don't tell me you believe what Johnson is saying!
He slapped Roundtree hard in the face with his ham-sized open palm.
Everything Johnson has said is true, and we all know it. So don't embarrass yourself by lying.
I made you, you self-righteous steroid addict!
Don't threaten me. I saw the Soviets roll their tanks down the streets of Austria when I was a boy. Believe me, there's nothing you can do that would frighten me.
Hans, you idiot! You're Danish, not Austrian. And the Soviets occupied Austria 50 years before you were even born.
I'm a politician, Rupert.
Ow!
I'm allowed to embellish my past for the sake of drama.
I got you elected. Your career was sinking when I talked you into running for governor. If it hadn't been for me, you'd be doing infomercials by now.
Speerhoof's face turned red with anger, and he put his large hands down hard on the edge of Roundtree's massive desk.
I don't do infomercials.
He pushed the desk forward, sliding its great bulk into Roundtree's stomach and pushing him all the way back to the office wall.
You're going to answer every one of Mr. Johnson's questions completely and truthfully. Do I make myself clear?
Yes.
Speerhoof eased his grip on the desk ever so slightly.
Let's Kill Zach was on our list of shows to be developed anyway. We were just hoping to find someone better looking to be the lead.
Hey, I'm sorry, but you didn't poll with the 18 to 29 demographic.
Who's the hitman you hired?
No, I don't know.
I swear, I don't know. It was done through intermediaries. I spoke to him once over the net, audio only, and on a protected channel with voice masking. It wasn't even a good connection. I could barely understand him when he said the word kill. I paid half his fee up front to a Cayman account. The other half was promised on delivery. Honestly, I don't know who he is.
When is he gonna try and kill Sexy?
He was supposed to do it at the first concert. Make it look like a crazed fan. We thought that might be the most dramatic.
If he couldn't do it then, he promised to do it straight out at the third concert.
That's tonight.
Everyone would be expecting it to happen at the last concert. We wanted to be a little more unpredictable.
You get a bigger bang that way.
Call off the hit.
I can't. I don't know how to contact the killer. I can't stop it.
I turned to Speerhoof. The concert starts in half an hour. We have to stop it.
You go. As I told you at our last meeting, I can't be part of this.
Yeah, you're all hard, Mr. Governor. The area around the fart was jammed with press bots, flesh and blood media, and wannabe concertgoers even 5 minutes before curtain time. I pushed my way through the crowd as best I could, making more than a few enemies along the way, and made my way to one of the police officers stationed at the entranceway.
My name's Zach Johnson. I'm Sexy's bodyguard. I need to get in right away.
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, but we have orders from Miss Sprockett's people that you are not to be allowed in the arena.
What?
Apparently, you're no longer in Miss Sprockett's employ.
I know that, but I have to get in. She's in danger.
Which might be why there are like 500 cops in and around the arena right now.
Look, just call Tony Ricky. He'll vouch for me. You could even call the governor.
Mr. Johnson, no offense, but I have 50,000 people to deal with right now. Why don't you call Captain Ricky or the governor or the World Council yourself?
The cop turned away, and I desperately netted with Tony on my wrist interface.
Tony!
Zach, you can't come in.
What?
I'm sorry. Sexy and Smiles went directly to the fart management. They said that if you are found inside the arena, they will cancel the concert. We have to keep you out. I had to pull a few strings just to keep them from having you banned from New Frisco entirely.
Tony, you have to get me in. They're gonna try to kill Sexy tonight on stage.
Who is?
I don't know, but it's a professional hitman.
Are you certain?
Absolutely. Rupert Roundtree confessed it to me 20 minutes ago.
Rupert Roundtree? I thought he was trying to kill you.
Yeah, it's a long story.
Well, do you have any proof?
Other than an unrecorded confession that took place in the presence of the governor? No.
The governor was there?
Like I said, long story. The point is that we have to cancel the concert.
Do you have a description of the hitman?
Nothing. It was an anonymous hire.
I'll speak to Sexy's people. But if we cancel the concert now, we're going to have a riot on our hands.
At least get me inside.
Then I know there'll be a riot. Like it or not, Zach, you're not coming in.
The screen went blank, and a wave of despair and frustration washed over me. The press bots and correspondents were scurrying around, prepping themselves for live netcasts from the scene. The night was hot, the air was electric, and there was murder on the wind.
My client was going to die, and there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. And that's when my head started to buzz in a very familiar way, and a very well-shaped silhouette appeared from the shadows, like a wraith from the forest.
Hey there, sad sack. You look like you could use some help.
Haro is wearing a tight tweed skirt and matching jacket over a white blouse. Her heels were high, and a wide-brimmed hat covered half of her holographic face. Her look was 100% femme fatale, which sent a chill down my spine.
Before you say anything, I just want you to know that I'm still angry with you.
I figured that. Join the club.
But as I said yesterday, I'm a professional, and we have a job to do. So I'm setting all our emotional baggage deep into my random access memory while we see this through.
All right.
After that, all bets are off. Got it?
Got it. Are you up to speed on the situation?
I monitored your call with Captain Ricky. Now come on, let's get you in that arena.
The HV reporter was looking at the notes on his palm computer and finishing a cup of coffee. He was a little thinner than me, but about my height, which is pretty much all I was looking for. Hey, I tapped him on the shoulder. You're,
John Blue from Instant Buzz.
John Blue from Instant Buzz. He turned to me and flashed me a smile.
Yes, I am. And you're Zach Johnson. Good to meet you.
Likewise. I was looking closely at the all-access pass around his neck. You're here for the concert, huh?
No, not really. I just like the coffee.
Funny. Well, good meeting you. Enjoy the show.
You too.
He smiled and turned away, and when his back was turned, I popped my gun into my hand and fired.
Ooh!
He spun around quickly.
Did you just shoot me in my ex-male model butt?
It's a trank dart.
Oh.
He stumbled into my arms.
Sorry about that.
I pulled him into the shadows of the building, grabbed his pass, and sat him by the wall. Hara threw a hologram over me that made me look exactly like him, and we were back in business. That is, until I rounded the corner.
Oh, there you are, John.
I turned and saw a pretty blonde woman approaching, a cameraman at her side.
Andrea, your co-host.
Andrea, my co-host.
She came up and stood beside me as the cameraman squatted in front of us, prepping his camera.
I was starting to wonder if you'd been kidnapped. We're doing a live bumper in about 10 seconds.
Live? Why don't you do this one?
Right. You mean you're actually going to let me get a word in this time?
Yeah. Just kidding.
And by the way, you better lay off those donuts. You're starting to lose that ex-male model body.
And we're on in 5, 4, 3...
Andrea and John here at New Frisco's famed Fart Arena for what has become the musical event of the year. Sexy Sprockets death-defying Menage Abattoir Tour. And the energy out here is absolutely radioactive. Isn't that right, John?
Actually, it's really boring here.
What?
It's a total snooze fest. There's nothing happening here whatsoever. Anyone thinking of coming here should think again, because this concert is duller than dull. I'm leaving now, as a matter of fact.
John?
So, just to recap, it's really dull here. Nothing to see. Please, stay away. And don't watch the faux network. It's an insult to humanity. This is Jeff and Angela.
John and Andrea.
Right, John and Andrea, signing off.
Andrea and the cameraman stared at me open-mouthed and unbelieving for an uncomfortable nano. I shrugged my shoulders.
I gotta go.
Ugh, he's cute, but as dumb as a doormat.
I used John's all-access pass to get into the arena through the press gate. Hara kept the holographic disguise on me as I made my way backstage.
What's the plan?
We have to find Sexy and get her to cancel the concert.
Wow, that's a generalized and bad plan even for you.
We have to stop the show.
You don't think the fans will riot?
There'll be a bigger panic if Sexy's killed on stage.
We moved quickly through the backstage area and down the hallway to Sexy's dressing room.
Sexy! It's Zach!
I heard a track of Sexy's music playing inside. It worried me a little that I was becoming so familiar with Sexy's music, but I tried not to think about it too much.
Sexy, you're in danger tonight! Let me in! Can you still open this lock?
I stepped away from the door.
Just put your eye to the interface and let me do the rest.
I did as I was told. The red data beam flashed from my eye into the lock. When the door opened, I stepped inside. The music was louder than I had expected. The lights of the room were off, but the flaring meditation chamber bathed most of the room in a molten burgundy glow. Sexy wasn't there, but what I saw instead made my stomach turn. Carol was in the meditation chamber this time.
floating in the air and bathing in the deep red glow. Smile stood beside the projector, his grin smug, his expression hungry. I was too furious to speak, consumed by a rage more violent than I'd ever known. I moved toward him without thought, fueled only by emotion. He turned as I approached and didn't recognize me in the holographic disguise.
I'm sorry, but this room is off limits to the media.
I felt a few of his teeth break free of his jaw. He fell to the floor like a rag doll, but I lifted him up by the shirt collar as Hara dissipated the hologram. He turned to me, still conscious but dazed.
Johnson.
I hit him again in the face and felt the cartilage in his nose crack against my fist. He was bleeding from the mouth and nose now. This time I left him on the floor.
Turn this thing off!
It's set at a very high level. We may need to power it down slowly.
Turn it off now!
Get your eye close to the interface.
She flashed the data beam into the machine and powered it down quickly. Slowly, Carol sank to the floor. I stood beside her as she descended and cradled her as the last of the red glow faded and the room lights came up.
Is she okay?
Her vital signs are fine. Her heart rate and breathing were low due to the meditation, but they're returning to normal. Radiation is dissipating. She should be coming around in a couple nanos.
Good.
I gently laid her on the floor and put my coat under her head. Then I walked over to the meditation chamber. Then I turned to Smiles, who was sitting on the floor, holding his handkerchief to his bloody face.
Keep your hands off her!
I grabbed him by the collar and shook him furiously.
Keep away from her, or I swear I'll kill you with my bare hands. Do you understand me? Do you understand me?
Zach!
Do you understand me?
Leave him alone!
I felt the words deep in my head, as well as heard them. I turned and saw Carol, fully awake now, and crawling toward us. I let Smiles go and backed away from him as she approached. He slumped to the floor, and she cradled him in her arms.
Don't touch him again!
I could feel Carol reaching into my mind, trying to get control. I wasn't even sure she knew that she was doing it, but thankfully I was wearing a side blocker. That, and Hara's presence in my head, gives me protection against psionic attacks. Even so, I had to fight the urge to obey her.
Carol, he was poisoning you.
Get out of here!
Carol, he's done something to you.
I said get out of here! And don't come near me again!
I got to my feet as she helped Smiles wipe the blood from his face and turned away. Oh no. I was too late. The concert had begun. I ran down the hallway toward the stage. I wanted to put my earplugs in, but the sideblocker prevented me from doing so. I was tempted for a nano to take the sideblocker out, but didn't. Choosing instead to protect myself against the evil I didn't know, rather than the music I did. Hara's hologram ran with me, putting special slow motion effects in her hair and clothes as she did so.
Contact Elektra. Tell her Carol's in trouble and that she needs to get here right away.
She may not like having the message come from me.
There's no other way. She wouldn't be able to hear me over the noise.
I made it to the backstage area and cast a quick glance at Sexy on stage. It was pure bedlam, as I knew it would be. The crowd was even more raucous than before, with fans charging the stage steadily in ones and twos, and each time being grabbed by security and hauled away. Tony's men were in full force around the arena, and I was actually afraid that one of them would spot me and try to drag me away as well.
Hara, I need to talk to Tony.
Done. He's on the interface.
Tony, it's Zach. I'm backstage.
How'd you get inside?
Don't worry about it. Just let your men know that I'm here and that they shouldn't arrest me.
That will be a hard sell. Arresting you is like second nature to them. Any sign of the killer?
I'm sure there is, but I can't tell since I have no idea who it is. Have you screened the audience?
We checked them individually going in, and we're area scanning for weapons every 5 minutes. No sign of any weapons so far.
I don't like this.
You're making me nervous, Zach. I mean more so than usual.
Good. I'll let you know if I see anything.
I circled around the stage looking for any signs of trouble. I even discreetly watched Sexy's first costume change, slipping out of something small into something smaller. I saw signs of chaos, lunacy, and tastelessness everywhere I looked. Nothing out of the ordinary, in the context of everything else. No sign of anything that looked like a killer. And that's when I knew things were bad.
I really don't like this. We're missing something here. Something very big.
Any idea when during the show the killer is supposed to strike?
None whatsoever, but let's figure this out now. If I'm a killer, how do I kill Sexy?
Make her listen to her own music? Or maybe make her wear a skirt with a hem below the knee?
And we're standing in the wings on the right side of the stage with a full view of Sexy on stage and the lion's share of the arena crowd, my mind desperately running through the possibilities.
A sniper's no good. There's too much movement on stage and there's no place to get off a good shot, except for the luxury boxes. Does Roundtree have a luxury box here?
Captain Ricky's men are stationed in all of the luxury boxes, and they scanned negative for weapons.
What about a crazed fan with a sidearm or a bomb, then? They could get close to the stage and attack.
The audience has been scanned for weapons as well.
The press, too?
Yes, all negative.
I turn my gaze back to the stage, scanning the musicians and stage sets.
What about something on stage?
It scanned negative before the show for weapons and explosives.
It wouldn't have to be a bomb. The set pieces could be sabotaged.
That would mean that the killer would have access to the backstage area. Do you think it's an inside job?
It has to be.
The pieces of the puzzle were beginning to come together in my mind. The pattern notes. They all indicated easy access to Sexy. The kid with the bomb flowers had a legit backstage pass, and he was chosen because of his history of chasing Sexy. That was no coincidence. This has been an inside job all along, and we didn't see it. Sexy and the girls shimmied across the stage as the dancers, minus the ones I'd injured two nights before, strode onto the stage.
It's one of the dancers. It has to be.
They don't have access to Sexy's hotel, and I checked them out. They're dancers, not killers. They're built to sway, not slay.
And then it clicked. Baba Wawa.
What?
It's a joke from an old television show about a newscaster with a speech impediment. She couldn't say her name right, and it came out Baba Wawa.
That's totally unhelpful here, Zach.
No. Roundtree said that the hitman was hard to understand. He thought it was a poor communication line, but the hitman couldn't say kill. And the kid with the flowers? He told the police that he got them from someone who said that the flowers would sway Sexy. It was a joke. It wasn't sway the killer was saying, it was...
slay!
It's Lusty, Hara. Lusty's the hitman. I mean, hitwoman.
Assassin. And that's a shame, because right now she has a meat cleaver in her hand.
Let Tony know. And let him know that we're taking her out.
The Love Cutlets production number was a crowd favorite with its flying meat, flashing cleavers, and undulating dancers. Tonight was no different, except for the fact that if I didn't act soon, it was going to end with some real butchering.
Hara, do you remember the guy whose leg I broke?
You're going to have to give me more to go on, Zach. There have been so many over the years.
The dancer the other night.
Oh, Hank.
Throw a hologram of his image over me. I'm going on stage.
You understand, of course, that a hologram won't help your dancing abilities, right?
Hara!
She shrugged and put the holographic disguise of the dancer over me. No one seemed to notice me as I stepped on stage, which is a good thing because the sight of the 50,000 screaming people stopped me dead in my tracks. I could actually feel the force of their screams pressing against me like a strong wind. The stage floor was shaking from the music, and the heat from the spotlights was so intense I felt like a soy burger in the McMunchies warming tray. It was simply overwhelming.
Zach, snap out of it.
I fought back the stage fright and began moving slowly across the stage. One of the security people at the foot of the stage looked my way and furrowed his brow. I quickly looked away and started bobbing my head in a desperate effort to find the beat.
Nice cover job, Zach. No one's going to notice the background dancer who can't dance.
I carefully made my way over to where Misty, Sissy, and Lusty were dancing a couple of meters behind Sexy. All three of them, and the men with whom they were dancing, did double takes when they saw me approach, but they kept up with the dance, if a little more awkwardly now. Lusty was on the end of the dance line, and I moved closer to her as she danced in front of one male dancer, bumping and grinding her hips against him. I wiggled next to them and tried to match their movements as best I could.
Not the twist, Zach. Anything but the twist.
The entire group of dancers, as one, moved to the left, but I caught Lusty's hand and pulled her toward me as the others continued on. She shimmied alongside me, improvising as I leaned close to her.
Don't do it, Lusty.
What?
I know what you're planning. Don't do it.
Zach?
It's not too late. You can turn back now.
And turn back she did, only not in the way I had hoped. She attacked almost quicker than I could see, spinning around cleanly and swinging the cleaver in her hand at my neck. I brought my arm up and blocked the swing, but the blade sank deeply into my forearm. Lodging itself in my body armor, not my flesh, thankfully, but hurting like hell nonetheless. I fought off the pain and forced back any regrets I had about hitting a woman, then sent a left jab at her face. It was as quick as I could muster, but she avoided it easily. I followed quickly with a right. She saw that coming as well and sidestepped it. Then she pulled me close and sent her knee into my crotch. Then gave me a left jab and right cross to the face that knocked me to the floor. I later learned that Lusty was a minor Psi as well. She had precog abilities, allowing her to see a second or two into the future. That gave her a nice edge in a fistfight. The fight had happened too quickly for anyone to notice. The crowd's attention was firmly on Sexy and the others who were on the opposite side of the stage. So few people, if anyone, saw me go down. And only I, from my position on the floor, saw Lusty pull the laser knife from her boot and shimmy her way across the stage. I got to my knees as the holographic disguise dissipated. There was no time for subtlety now. I scrambled to my feet and launched myself at Lusty. She was close to Sexy now, whose back was still turned, caught up in her song and dance. Lusty ignited the laser knife, and its electronic red blade flashed 300 centimeters out from the handle. Everyone saw it now. Misty, Sissy, the musicians, even the crowd. Everyone, that is, except Sexy, who was too caught up in herself to see her own death approaching.
Lusty, don't!
Lusty put a hand on Sexy's shoulder, and Sexy turned around. She saw the knife in Lusty's hand and still didn't understand what was happening. It was clear to me then that this wasn't just a job to Lusty. It was personal. She wanted Sexy to see her death coming, and she wanted to watch Sexy die and make sure that Sexy knew who had ended her life. But she never got the chance. I leapt at Lusty from behind, and this time she was too caught up in the work at hand to foresee it. I grabbed her knife hand just as she started to bring the blade down. We tumbled to the floor and rolled across the stage, each of us wrestling for control of the weapon. She headbutted me hard in the face, which I wasn't expecting, and then kneed me again in the groin, which I should have been expecting. I lost my grip on the knife, and she quickly grabbed it. Then she rolled on top of me and raised the blade high over her head, giving her, she hoped, enough momentum to pierce my armor. I popped my gun at a hand and was just about to pull the trigger when Lusty froze in mid-swing. Then her eyes rolled back in her head, and she tumbled off me, falling unconscious to the stage floor and curled into a fetal position. I looked up and saw Carol standing on the stage, a little smile flaring the corners of her mouth.
Hi, Theo.
You gave her a side rest, huh?
I couldn't have her putting a hole in my favorite uncle, now could I?
Carol smiled, turned toward the audience, and gave them a little bow.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my obscenely old school bodyguard, Zachary Nixon Johnson!
I waved.
My double X set and backup dancer, Carol Gavada!
Tony's men slapped the cuffs on the still unconscious Lusty and dragged her off the stage. The musicians took their places to finish the concert, and I turned away, hoping to get off the stage as quickly as possible. I actually began to think that we were on our way to a happy ending. You'd think that I'd have learned by now never to think that. Suddenly, the stage lights dimmed dramatically, and a blood-red spotlight cut the darkness. The intensity of the light was so great that I feared at first that it was a giant laser, and in retrospect, that would have been much better. The light did no damage when it first hit the stage. It simply enveloped Carol. That's when I noticed that the beam of light was the same shade of red as the projector beam from Smile's meditation chamber.
Uh-oh.
What is it?
The radiation level of the area just shot up.
Oh, that can't be good. Carol stood motionless in the red beam and let it wash over her, actually lifting her head upward as though she wanted to feel the light on her face. Then she stretched her arms out wide and rose into the air.
Carol!
I wanted to run to her, but the heat from the beam was so intense that I couldn't get close. And yet somehow, Carol was safe inside it.
It's an oversized version of the meditation chamber. It's supercharging Carol's power.
Where's Smiles?
Right here, Johnson.
Sammy Smile strode onto the stage with a swagger of a conquering headliner. His orange suit was smeared with blood from his broken nose and split lip, but even though his teeth looked like a picket fence after a cattle stampede, he was smiling so widely that his cheeks were messing up his hair.
Did you think I'd let Sexy just walk away from me? Did you really think I'd let her go without getting a replacement?
What are you doing to Carol?
She's not Carol anymore. She's the new Sexy, better and more powerful than ever before.
He pushed a button on his wrist in her face, and the spotlight on Carol cut out. She fell to the stage floor, landing on her hands and knees.
Carol!
I rushed to her and helped her to her feet. She seemed weak and a little shaken, but otherwise intact.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
A sort of distant look came over her eyes, and she stood straighter, looking around the arena as though seeing it for the first time.
As a matter of fact, I feel great!
When the band started back up, Misty and Sissy and the dancers on stage slipped back into their routine. and Carol ran to the front of the stage, pointing at the crowd. The concert had picked up right where it left off, only Carol was fronting the show instead of Sexy. The fact that Carol wasn't singing didn't seem to matter to anyone. They loved it just the same. She blew a kiss at the crowd, and the people in the first few rows, male and female alike, were so overwhelmed that they simply fainted. Only Smiles, Sexy, Hara, and I were unaffected.
What the toss is going on?
It's like they say, Johnson. The show must go on!
She's not even singing.
She doesn't need to. Carol's psionic power is so strong now that she can simply broadcast her thoughts directly into everyone's heads. Everyone out there is hearing her thoughts, and they're loving it.
But I don't hear anything.
You and Smiles are wearing psi blockers. Sexy, having experienced Smiles' treatments for many years already, has built up an immunity to this type of psionic broadcasting.
No way! There is no way that my fans would forget about me this easily!
Believe it, Sexy. You're not even a has-been now. You're a never-was.
Sexy picked up her microphone and ran to the front of the stage, trying to get in front of Carol. But Carol waved her hand and telekinetically swatted Sexy away like a fly. Sexy flew head over heels and landed on a pile of red satin pillows, stunned but otherwise unhurt.
I'm still hotter than her! Aren't I? Will somebody please tell me that I'm hot?
Hara and I were still focused on Carol.
Carol's never had that kind of telekinetic power before.
You're right. Frankly, I'm not sure she can control it.
She can't, but I can. I've built safeguards into the technology that will allow me to control anything up to a level 4 psi.
But Carol's a level 6.
No, she's not. She's a level 1 class 6.
She's class 1, level 6.
Which classification measures potential again? Class or level?
Level!
Oh, sweet! I always get those two mixed up. I swear they change those around now and again.
Well.
Hara turned her gaze from Carol to the arena's ceiling.
There's an extremely good likelihood that you'll never make that mistake again.
Why is that?
Because we're all about to die, you idiot!
Carol had literally blown the roof off the arena. Her telekinetic power had peeled back the 100 kiloton metal and polymer lid of the structure like the lid of a sardine can.
Oh, this isn't right.
Smiles frantically punched buttons on his wrist interface.
The technology should allow me to control her.
She's too powerful for your gadgets.
Over the past few days, Smiles had surreptitiously given Carol the same kind of psionic enhancing treatments that he'd given Sexy for years. But while supercharging Carol's abilities, he had unknowingly broken down the natural power dampening barriers of her brain. He had thought that the technology he'd used to control Sexy's power for so long would work on Carol as well. But where Sexy was a babbling brook, Carol was a raging sea, and all Smiles had was a beaver dam and a leaky bucket. And now we were all gonna pay for it.
What have you done to my niece, Chico?
I turned and saw Elektra climbing onto the stage. And she was wearing a psi blocker, for which I was very grateful, so she was in control of her own mind.
Elektra, what are you doing here?
Netted and told me that you needed me here, remember?
Oh, yeah. In retrospect, I think that might have been a mistake.
What's going on?
Long story. Right now, we have to get these people out of the arena before Carol brings the whole place down.
Evacuating the arena won't help.
What do you mean?
Carol's power is still increasing.
That can't be. The red spotlight's off.
Smiles' augmentation treatments only began the process. They lit the fuse.
Please don't use that metaphor. Nothing good ever comes from you using a fuse bomb metaphor.
Without the natural dampeners in her mind, Carol's power is continuing to increase. This wind you feel isn't a natural one. It's telekinetic leakage, and it's only going to get stronger. In a few minutes, she won't be able to contain her power at all. She'll hit critical mass.
What happens then?
Let's just say it won't really matter who becomes governor of California in the next election, because there won't be a California to govern.
The wind was getting stronger, picking up debris and hurling it around the arena. The structure's damaged supports bent and swayed from the force of Carol's power.
How do we stop her?
Other than rebuilding the dampeners in her mind, I have no idea.
Then how do we rebuild the dampeners?
We can't. Carol has to do that herself. We have to convince her to do it.
I took a step toward Carol. I got hit with a blast of telekinetic wind that nearly blew me off my feet. I popped my gun into my hand and aimed directly at Carol. stood motionless amid the fury.
Tarzan!
The cable flew out against the wind and latched onto the only secure thing in the entire arena, Carol herself, wrapping around her leg several times. I detached the cable from the gun muzzle, got the gun back into my wrist holster, and held on for dear life.
Electra! Hara! Help me get close to her!
Electra moved behind me and leaned into my back, propping me up against the wind. Hara became as solid as she could, her hands mostly, and began pushing as well. Together, we fought off the wind and took a couple steps toward Carol.
You know, this isn't the way I imagined this going.
What do you mean?
I opened the box you gave me this afternoon at your house. You forgot about it after you had whatever epiphany it was about this case and ran off.
I said that was for later.
You give a girl a little black box and then run off and expect her not to open it?
He gave you a little black box?
We were making our way through the telekinetic storm, baby step by baby step. The winds were lashing at us, but we were hunkered down low and held tightly to the cable, Electra and Hara lending their strength to mine.
Well, what do you think?
I think you have great taste in rings.
He gave you a ring?
It was my mother's ring, and her mother's too, I think. I'm not really sure. My family history is a little spotty. I'm fairly certain that it's not stolen, though. So what do you think? You want to make things official?
Only if you say the words, Chico.
As fate would have it, I was already down on one knee, thanks to the fierceness of the telekinetic wind around us. So at least there was one traditional element to the proposal.
Electra! Will you marry me?
She leaned harder into my back and wrapped her left hand around me. I felt her lips, soft and moist against the back of my neck, and smelled the sweetness of her hair on the violent breeze.
Does this answer your question?
I looked down at her left hand on my chest and saw the ring on her finger.
Great! Let's plan a June wedding or a November funeral, whichever is more appropriate!
I looked up at Carol, still standing, arms spread wide, at the center of the storm. I felt Electra's arms around me and Hara's presence in my head. Put my head down and took two more giant steps forward.
No one's dying today! No one!
I pushed on. The winds eased ever so slightly the closer we got to Carol. She was only a few meters away now, but the walls of the arena were starting to tear at the seams. I knew we were fast running out of time. With my head down, I lurched forward once more and suddenly felt the winds ease dramatically. Without the resistance, I tumbled forward and fell to the floor. I looked back and saw Electra still clinging to the cable and fighting the winds.
What happened?
We're at the eye of the storm.
I grabbed onto the cable and reached my hand out to Electra, who was still struggling.
Grab my hand, honey!
Don't worry about me. Save Carol.
Electra!
I'm fine!
She wrapped the cable around her midsection.
I'll be there in a nano. Just go!
We shared a long, wordless look, and then she waved me away. Slowly, I got to my feet and took a step toward Carol. She didn't seem to notice me.
Carol! Carol, it's me, Zach!
She turned, and I felt the winds in the arena shift with her movements. A huge portion of the arena's southern wall ripped free and simply blew away. Through the hole that it left, I could see that the winds had expanded outside of the arena. Carol's storm was growing.
Listen, Chica, I know you don't want to destroy anyone, or everyone, as the case may be, so I'm gonna need you to power down, okay? Can you do that?
Her face was serene, with the slightest trace of a smile on her lips. Her gaze was distant, as though she were looking through me. And my words seemed to have no effect. Being this close to her made my head hurt from the psionic power that she was putting out. I could feel her inside my mind, fighting through the psi blocker. And unfortunately, I knew that I didn't have much time left.
You know, you're officially my employee right now, so I'm gonna be liable for the damage you're doing. I'm gonna have to take it out of your pay.
Her eyes shifted subtly in her head, as though they were focusing on me.
Do you have any idea how much an arena like this costs?
Her body remained completely motionless, but her eyes moved again, as though she was calling my attention to them.
You can hear me, can't you, Carol?
She nodded, almost imperceptibly. And then, she blinked her right eye three times.
She blinked her right eye. Did you see that?
I saw it.
That's our code for trouble. It means she's still in there. She still remembers who she is.
Whatever you're going to do, Zach, you better do it quickly.
You can do it, Carol. You can control this. I know you can. How can I help you?
She blinked her right eye again, three times fast. And then, a fourth time.
Four blinks. What does four blinks mean?
It means please shoot me in the head. Remember?
A pit opened in my stomach, as I remembered.
Carol?
Her right eye blinked four times again, more persistently, and it was as though someone had reached into my chest and pulled out my heart. I flicked my wrist and popped my gun into my hand.
Are you sure about this, Carol?
I stared at her face hard, through the tears that were forming in my eyes. I stared, searching desperately for the smallest sign of a negative response. I found nothing. Instead, she very clearly nodded her head. I stood back and wiped my tears with my sleeve. Then I raised the gun and pointed it at her.
Zach, what are you doing?
Oh, Gates, help me.
Zach, no!
Hara's solid light hand ripped the gun from my grip. Hara, give me the gun.
It won't work.
Don't make this any harder for me. You saw what she did.
She's way too powerful to be killed by your gun, Zach.
I'm gonna trust Carol on this. Now give me the gun.
Hara backed her hologram away from me and held on to the gun tightly. Her hands were a little unsteady. It might have been because the effort of holding the gun was taxing her capabilities, or it may have been the effort of what she knew was to come. Because, much to my surprise, she raised the gun and pointed it at me.
What are you doing?
It's the only way, big guy.
Hara, give me the gun. That's a direct command. Give me my gun.
I'm sorry, but I can't.
And there it was. Everything that Randy had warned me about had come to pass. Hara had refused a direct command. With thousands, perhaps millions of lives hanging in the balance, she had abandoned me. And as she stood there with my own gun trained on me, she had the femme fatale glare of a woman scorned. It was the end of every pulp novel ever written, but I couldn't let her do it. Slowly, sadly, I reached my hand toward my wrist interface and placed a finger on the button to download the virus that would erase Harv. My hand was shaking, but I was running out of time, and I had no options left. Then, she stopped me with two words.
Trust me.
Harv had saved my life more times than I could count. I trusted him implicitly to do the right thing. He was my partner, my friend. He had my back. But as Randy had said, this wasn't Harv anymore. It was Hara. The question was, could I trust her the way I trusted Harv? Was there enough Harv left in Hara to trust? There was only one way to find out.
What's the punchline?
What?
The joke you wrote, the Archimedes Bakery.
How did you know about that?
It doesn't matter. Just tell me the joke.
Why are there no round boxes at the Archimedes Bakery?
Why?
Because their pi are squared.
Okay, I trust you. She aimed the gun at me. Then her hologram shimmered, and her form disappeared, reassembling itself into Harv. The blast hit me full in the chest and enveloped my body in a thin layer of intense pain. Every nerve, every bundle, every ganglia, synapse, and neuron in my body fired at once with a soul-twisting blast of pure agony. I was on fire. I was being pierced by a million needles. I was being torn apart. I was sitting through a never-ending Adam Sandler film retrospective. Darkness rolled in at me from all directions. Somewhere in the distance, I heard another scream and felt the winds of Carol's psionic storm envelop me. I awoke in a void. Bodiless and shapeless, I was nothing more than a floating consciousness in a sea of nothing.
This better not be eternity.
A white light appeared in the distance. Actually, distance isn't the correct term, because in a void, distance has no meaning. So let's just say that the light was very small at first and slowly grew larger. It took on a form after a few nanos, and I recognized it.
Carol.
She was luminescent, almost ethereal, and I didn't like where all this symbolism seemed to be heading.
Hola, tío.
What happened?
I went a little crazy. Lost control of myself, broke some stuff, almost destroyed the Earth. Sorry.
It's all right. It wasn't your fault.
What happened after Harv shot me?
Pain.
That I remember.
Me too. That was the point.
What do you mean? She flashed a very mature and knowing smile at me that made me feel kind of old.
I needed something to snap me out of my trance in order to give my mind a chance to regain control of my power. Harv knew that. But he also knew that in the state I was in, I was fairly impervious to physical pain.
So he shot me?
Your mind has always been an open book to me, Tio. It's a sort of bond we share. When Harv shot you, it hurt.
You can say that again.
I know, because I felt that pain just as much as you did. It brought me back to reality and gave my mind a chance to power down.
So you're okay?
I'm fine.
And everything else?
Well, the fart's pretty much destroyed. The walls collapsed. They found the roof in the bay.
What about Elektra?
She's fine. She and everyone else who was there, they're all safe. And most of them don't remember what happened.
Well, I suppose in the long run, then it was worth it.
Well, what do you mean?
It's not a bad way to go out, really. Saving your loved ones and 50,000 innocent bystanders with crappy-tasted music.
Tio, you're not dead.
I'm not.
Of course not.
I'm in a void here. I've neither shape nor form.
That's because you're not thinking of one.
I looked around again and saw my left hand appearing from the darkness, becoming more and more real with every nano. My right arm soon followed, as did the rest of my body.
Any chance I could get some clothes, too?
Think harder.
I did. And a nano later, I was wearing my favorite gray suit, trench coat, and fedora.
So let me get this straight. When Harv shot me...
He used the big hurt. Lots of pain, but non-lethal.
Wow. I need to get Randy to turn that down a notch. So, where are we right now?
We're in your mind.
And my body?
Theo, look, no offense, but this is getting a little sappy. I came here to let you know that everything's okay, but I really have to go now.
What?
Her form began to drift away, slowly shrinking.
I'll see you in the real world.
Carol?
Oh, and Theo, thanks again. You're the best.
I watched her form shrink away until it was a tiny white light against the lightlessness of the void. Then, all at once, the void began to brighten. Ebon turned to black, black turned to gray to white, and then it was almost too bright to look at. That's when I opened my eyes.
Hola, chico.
I smiled and felt safe at last. I awoke in a hospital bed where I'd lain unconscious for 4 days. I had 3 cracked ribs, a hairline fracture in my left leg, and a concussion. All of which were painful, but none of which, fortunately, would do me any lasting damage. And as the months went by, the final threads of the case would play themselves out and come to resolution. Sexy Sprockets, as promised, officially retired from the music industry, ending her career with a concert that has become known as The Last Farts. She recently announced her candidacy for governor of California, and at the Nano is pulling about even with incumbent Hans Spierhoft. It's worth noting that Sexy's younger sister, Sassy Sprockets, has just embarked on a singing career. Industry insiders say that the younger Sprockets has a much better singing voice, but much smaller breasts than her older sister. They therefore give her little chance at any real success. Rupert Roundtree was arrested and charged with solicitation of murder, but was acquitted due to lack of material evidence, and Governor Spierhoft's refusal to testify, citing executive privilege. In retaliatory news, several tax loopholes for media corporations such as Faux were closed by the state government, and the media deregulation legislation was vetoed and then killed by the governor. Undaunted, Roundtree has begun an all-news channel, which unfortunately reports mostly fiction. It was learned that Sammy Smiles had once been employed in the weapons R&D department at the World Council Department of Defense. It was during his tenure there that he developed the technology of psionic augmentation and psionic broadcasting over the AM radio spectrum. The DoD is still uncertain as to how they lost track of him and the technology. Smiles' current whereabouts are unknown. He disappeared from the FART during its destruction and is currently a wanted fugitive. Lusty, last name unknown, was tried for attempted murder, but was acquitted by an all-middle-aged jury on the grounds of insanity. In post-verdict interviews, the jurors claimed that, after listening to Sexy's music in court, they completely understood Lusty's desire to kill her, and could therefore not hold Lusty responsible for her actions. Lusty has since become a solo artist and is currently the headliner at the Wively Widow White House Club in Lafayette, Louisiana. And the World Society of Isaac Newton scholars recently put out a statement saying that Newton had consumed a little too much absinthe on the night that he made his dire prediction about the world ending in 2060. What he really meant to say, they claim, is that the world will bend in 2060, which apparently was some kind of metaphor.
Hey, the guy couldn't be brilliant all the time. A few weeks after I was released from the hospital, Electra and I took a trip to our favorite spot on the new Costa Rican coast. We spent most of our time lying on the beach planning our wedding with Harv.
Are you sure you want the imported champagne for the toast?
Harv was sitting in a holographic lounge chair.
The domestic brands are becoming quite hip.
The domestic doesn't taste as good.
Harv smiled and nodded. He had returned to his original holographic interface since that last fateful nano with the fart. His hair was a little more stylish now, and his body seemed a little buffer as well. Not that I noticed those types of things. But at the core, he was still the same Harv.
Ah, good for you, Zach. I was testing you. Your palate is evolving.
And with plenty of buffalo wings on the hors d'oeuvres table, though. With lots of blue cheese dressing on the side.
Alas. One step forward, two steps back.
Harv claimed that the Hara experiment was officially over, and that he had permanently erased her hologram from his memory. I couldn't say that I was sorry to see her go. Hara was perfect in a lot of ways, but, like they say, redheads are just trouble.
Just a reminder, my mother will be there, and I don't want her sitting next to any of your former clients.
Done. And speaking of former clients, you've agreed to invite Ona Thompson. Are you also inviting Tua and Thria?
Didn't they try to kill me?
Technically, yes. But if we're going to exclude anyone who's ever tried to kill you, then we'll need to cut another 36 guests from the list, including several members of Electra's family.
Okay, but don't put all three of them at the same table.
A fine idea. Have I mentioned yet that you'll be checking out this evening?
Oh, you skipped that part.
What's going on?
Well, you see, it's kind of a funny story, really.
You mean funny ha-ha or funny odd?
Both, actually. It seems that the pilot episode of Let's Kill Zach was pirated and illegally put on the net.
Oh, no.
It's become sort of a cult hit, especially here in Costa Rica. So much so that the premier Latin American network, Holomundo, is planning a Costa Rica version. It's called Matemos a Zach.
Oh, well.
Electra got to her feet and tied a wrap skirt around her bathing suit.
It was fun while it lasted. I was getting a little homesick anyway.
Our hovercraft, with Harv remotely piloting, pulled up neatly beside our lounge chairs. I slowly got to my feet and limped toward the passenger seat.
Yeah, I get a little antsy if I go too long without someone trying to kill me. Matemos a Zach, did you say?
Correct.
Harv held the hover door open for me.
The show was to be very representative of the Costa Rican culture. In the first episode, droids were going to be pelting you with spherical granite bowlers.
I settled into the hover and fastened my seatbelt as Electra revved the engine. Sounds like first-rate entertainment. It's a shame we'll miss it. Electra gunned the hover and we sped off down the beach, a cloud of pure white sand in our wake, and bloodthirsty reality show producers on our tail.
By the way...
Harv's hologram leaned forward in the rear seat of the hover.
Did I mention that I plan on bringing a date to your wedding?
A date?
I'm allowed, aren't I?
Of course you are, Harv.
Oh, good. His name's Guy. He's a fashion model from New Milan.
Guy?
I realized recently that I prefer men. That's not a problem, is it?
I smiled, eased the hover seat back just a bit, and watched the sun set a glorious red and orange over the sea.
Hey, no problem at all, buddy. No problem at all.
My name is Zachary Nixon Johnson. I am the last private detective on Earth. And my life rocks. The Radioactive Redhead is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005 by John Zacor and Lawrence Ganem. Recorded by arrangement with Daw Books Incorporated. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Kimberly Gilbert, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Danny Gavigan, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Casey Platt, Bradley Smith, Evan Casey, Eric Messner, Nick DePinto, Elizabeth Jernigan, Gregory Gordon, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Terrence Aselford, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Additional original music by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Radioactive Redhead, be sure to look for the next episode in the Nuclear Bombshell series, The Frost-Haired Vixen.
available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
What is the meaning of this?
No, Galatinov will leave this place alive.
You goddamn dogs!
Mother! Run, Mikhail! Run!
Get the boy!
Father?
I'm not your father, boy. Why do you persist in calling to ghosts?
I want to go home.
You are home.
Lieutenant Colonel Vogt, please come in.
I don't have much time. Field Marshal Rommel is waiting. I assume these are up to the minute?
Yes, sir.
We'll all toast the success of Panzer Army Africa on the banks of the Nile. Heil Hitler.
Mein Gott.
Help me! Help me!
Kill it!
Hold up! Hurry! We've got to stop that beast! Go! Run it down!
It knows.
That man knows. We're in a minefield!
Shall I wait here, sir?
Yes, for now.
So Gallatin served with distinction in North Africa? That was 2 years ago. If he's been out of service since then, what makes you people think he can handle the job?
Because Major Gallatin is a professional. Major?
Come in.
Couldn't have picked a more desolate place, could you?
I couldn't find one. I am retired.
But, sir, can we at least brief you on what the mission involves?
All right.
There's an American agent in Paris.
Adams, his code name.
Your intelligence boys got a coded message from Adam a little more than 2 weeks ago. He said there's something big in the works. He was being watched, and he had information that had to be brought out of France by personal courier.
By 90 days after D-Day, we're planning on having more than 1 million boys over there to kick Hitler's ass. And we'd sure better know what's in the Nazis' hand.
Death. I'm sorry. Find someone else.
But sir...
I said I've retired.
Let's talk, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Michael, I want you to go to Paris.
Is it that vital?
Yes. If the Gestapo's watching Adam so closely, you can be certain he has information they don't want getting out. With your special talents, there's a possibility you can get in and out under the nose of the Gestapo.
All right. But my parachute training's rusty.
Major! We're screwed! You want to scrub the drop?
I'm going!
Welcome to France. You'll be leaving grand entrances, don't you?
Any entrance I survive is grand.
We have to get you to a safe place. Are you ready to run?
Always.
From international best-selling author Robert R. McCammon, a compelling tale of espionage and supernatural horror. The Wolf's Hour. In rich, vibrant, graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.